Welcome to the deep dive. We've got a really fascinating and honestly pretty intense set of materials in front of us today.
Absolutely, it's quite the stack.
We're navigating some seriously complex ideas here. We've pulled from Dolores Cannon's work on Nostradamus, specifically her interpretations of his prophecies.
Right, the conversations with Nostradamus material.
Exactly. And then we've got the foundational, really layered consciousness teachings that Seth channeled through Jane Roberts.
Which is a whole different angle, metaphysically speaking.
Definitely. And to try and ground all of this, we're bringing in cold, hard, global data from, well, basically the last 5 years, 2020, right through 2025.
And that covers quite a range. AI governance, climate stuff, displacement numbers.
Yeah, exactly. It's a broad spectrum. So our mission today isn't just to, summarize these things separately.
No, it's about synthesis.
Right. We want to perform a true synthesis. We're taking these two major metaphysical frameworks, one that's warning about some serious tribulation,
That's the canon Nostradamus perspective, largely.
and the other clarifying the mechanism of how consciousness evolves, how change actually happens.
Which is where Seth comes in.
And we're mapping them directly onto what's happening in the world right now. The core question is, are we currently living through what these very different sources describe as this intense period of evolutionary compression?
It's a big question, and it demands we get really precise with the language first.
Absolutely. We have to start with definitions because the main concepts we're tackling, they come with a lot of, let's say, cultural baggage.
Definitely.
So we're introducing two key terms right off the bat: the time of troubles and the shaft.
Okay. And it's kind of remarkable when you think about it, isn't it? That these sources, written decades apart, coming from completely different places, channeled prophecy versus channeled metaphysics,
Yeah.
they seem to be zeroing in on the same fundamental thing, this multi-year global phenomenon.
It's a striking convergence.
It is. Canon, looking through the lens of Nostradamus, she was focused more on the external stuff, right? The societal upheaval, the tribulation you see on the
The
news.
symptoms, maybe?
You could say that. Whereas Seth, in his massive body of work, he was clarifying the mechanism underneath it all, the internal psychological, the energetic pressure that actually creates that external upheaval.
Ah, okay, so cause and effect.
Pretty much. And the really crucial finding, if you synthesize them, is that the tribulation isn't some kind of punishment. It is the mechanism. It's the process itself in action.
Okay, let's unpack that first concept then, the time of troubles. This one carries a lot of weight, especially because Dolores Cannon really pinned it down through, well, years of meticulous work interpreting Nostradamus's quatrains, which are notoriously ambiguous.
Extremely ambiguous, yes. And she didn't treat it lightly. It's not just a throwaway line about bad times ahead.
Right, it's specific.
Very specific. In her book, Conversations with Nostradamus, Volume 1, there's a whole chapter, chapter 20, titled The Time of Troubles. She defines it explicitly.
And how does she define it? Not apocalypse, right?
No, definitely not an endpoint. It's defined as a distinct multi-year period of really intense transition and upheaval. But crucially, it's an upheaval that is required. It has to happen before humanity can make a significant positive evolutionary jump.
So, like a necessary bottleneck or a crucible, maybe.
Crucible is a great word for it. It's a phase you have to pass through to get to the next stage of development.
And importantly, her take moved away from the kind of 20th century focus on, specific religious wars or trying to pinpoint one single political bad guy.
Exactly. The focus wasn't on a singular villain. Canon interpreted it as a systemic phase of global pressure. That's the key.
Systemic meaning.
Meaning the pressure isn't just on one area, like politics or the economy. It's applied simultaneously across the board to basically every major system that humanity relies on: government, finance, environment, information, belief systems, everything.
Wow. Okay, so it's a full spectrum squeeze.
That's a perfect way to put it. That systemic quality is vital. Imagine, like, human civilization is a balloon.
Okay.
And it's expanded as far as it possibly can under the current rules, the existing physics, the belief systems, the institutions. The time of troubles is that moment where the pressure inside builds up so much that it forces a change, maybe even a rupture, leading to a whole new paradigm. It is the compression phase.
Got it. So if the time of troubles is the experience of being squeezed,
Yeah, what it feels like from the inside.
then this other term, the shaft, that's more like the map, the conceptual model of the path we're on during that squeeze.
Precisely. That's a good way to distinguish them. The shaft itself, as a concept synthesized from these works, is fundamentally described as a psychological and energetic corridor.
A corridor.
Like a passageway that collective consciousness moves through during these really intense evolutionary periods. It is the compression between worlds, quite literally.
Between worlds, meaning?
Meaning the old world, the old paradigm, the structures, the beliefs, the institutions that have defined reality for maybe centuries. It's collapsing behind us.
Yeah.
You can't hold anymore. But the new reality, the one that's, let's say, higher vibrational, more coherent, maybe more based on unity, that's still forming up ahead. It's not fully manifest yet.
Right.
So the shaft is that tight squeeze right in the middle. It's where the collapsing old and the emerging new overlap. And that overlap creates friction, intensity, immense pressure.
Okay, I can picture that. Now, we need a really important clarification here, especially for listeners who are deep into the Seth material.
Yes, this is critical.
Seth himself, in the material dictated through Jane Roberts, he never actually used the specific word shaft, did he?
No, he absolutely did not. That specific label, shaft, is, like we said, a modern interpretive nickname. It's a synthesis term.
Okay, so it's our label for the phenomenon he described.
Exactly. It's a label used to describe the precise, accelerating evolutionary mechanism that Seth did describe in great detail, the one involving the restructuring of the psyche, the collapse of probabilities. And we're matching that mechanism temporally to the timeline of upheaval described by Nostradamus through canon. So shaft becomes a useful shorthand for that period of intense compression, but you won't find that word in the Seth books themselves. It's an interpretive overlay, a synthetic term.
Got it. That's a crucial distinction. Okay, so let's zoom in on the experience then. If we accept, for the sake of argument, that we might be inside this narrowing corridor, this systemic compression phase, what does it actually feel like? What are the immediate observable signs that confirm this kind of internal chaos?
Well, the sources, when synthesized, point to four really powerful converging factors. These are the experiential markers.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is probably the most obvious one globally right now. Institutional loss of credibility.
Yeah, you can't miss that.
Right. And it's not just, you know, grumbling about politicians. It's a profound, deep loss of faith in the legacy structures. Governmental bodies, big finance, traditional media outlets, even global health organizations.
Everything feels a bit shaky.
Exactly. The scaffolding that held up our consensus reality, it's actively degrading. And the underlying reason, according to this framework, is that the old paradigms those institutions represent, they just aren't sufficient anymore. They can't solve the problems we face now.
That makes sense. That erosion of trust.
Yeah.
It must feed the second marker. Right?
Correctly. The second marker is intense psychological strain on a collective level.
You mean anxiety, stress?
Yes, but more than just the usual ups and downs. This isn't anxiety tied to just one specific event, like a war or a recession, although those contribute. It's a deeper, more generalized, pervasive uncertainty about the future itself.
Like the ground rules are shifting under our feet.
Precisely. It feels like the fundamental rules of reality are dissolving, or at least becoming unpredictable. And that leads to these intense spikes in anxiety, depression, burnout, just the generalized psychological fatigue spreading across whole populations.
And that feeling probably isn't helped by the third factor you mentioned.
Not at all. The third factor exacerbates it. Temporal distortion.
Temporal distortion, like time travel.
Huh. Not quite like science fiction. It's the subjective experience that time itself is speeding up.
Oh, yeah. People say that all the time. Where did the year go? The last 5 years feel like one.
Exactly that feeling. Everything seems to accelerate. Technological cycles that used to take decades now compress into months. Geopolitical crises pile up, overlapping before the last one even gets resolved. Information overload hits critical mass.
It feels like you can't keep up.
Right. And according to this view, that subjective feeling of acceleration is actually a sign of energetic compression. Things are literally vibrating faster, moving towards a point of change.
Wow. Okay. And the faster things move, the less time there is to react or build stable solutions, which just reinforces that feeling of instability.
Precisely. It's a feedback loop.
Yeah.
And that instability directly fuels the fourth factor, which is, frankly, dangerously visible today.
Which is?
Societal division, intense polarization.
Yeah. That seems to be everywhere.
It's intensifying globally. The ability for different groups, whether they're cultural, political, ideological, to find common ground, or even agree on a shared reality, seems to diminish rapidly. Echo chambers get stronger. Trust between groups evaporates.
It feels like things are fracturing.
They are. So these four markers, that profound institutional distrust, the crippling collective anxiety, the feeling that time is speeding up, and this radical polarization, they act like the dashboard warning lights for the time of troubles. When all four of those are flashing bright red intensely, it means the compression phase, the shaft, is fully active. It's not just one problem. It's a multi-vector challenge, hitting the system from all sides, demanding fundamental systemic change.
All right, so we have the markers, the feeling of being in the compression. But now we need to shift focus a bit from the experience to the purpose, because this is where the synthesis gets really compelling, right? The difference between seeing this as just tribulation versus seeing it as actual progress.
Exactly. If this chaos is genuinely part of an evolutionary mechanism, not just random bad luck or punishment, we need to understand what's actually driving the engine.
What's the point of the pressure?
And what's so fascinating, particularly in the Seth material, is the consistent emphasis that this pressure is described purely as propulsion.
Propulsion, like being pushed forward.
Yes, not punishment, not judgment. The chaos is functional. It serves a purpose. Humanity, as a collective consciousness, is being moved, pushed, propelled out of an old limiting system and into a new, potentially more expansive one.
So the chaos is just the sound of the old engine breaking down, or the friction of moving.
That's a great way to think about it. It's the sound of the old structure shattering because it can no longer contain the growth. It's the force of necessary growth meeting resistance.
Okay, if it's propulsion, what's the actual fuel? What's the engine doing?
That's where Seth's teachings come in, right? With the specific operational blueprint.
Precisely. Seth provides the mechanism, the restructuring of the psyche.
The psyche. So our minds, our consciousness. Yes, but on a fundamental level. This isn't just about individual therapy, though that's related. It's a planetary scale shift in how human consciousness processes reality itself.
Wow. How is that triggered?
According to Seth, this massive restructuring gets triggered when a civilization, collectively, reaches what he called a saturation point.
Saturation point, meaning full up.
Exactly. The civilization has essentially exhausted all the potential for meaningful growth under its current operating system, its core beliefs, its definitions of reality, its accepted limitations.
So our current model, what would that be? Materialism, separation.
Largely, yes. A model based heavily on industrial materialism, the idea of fundamental separation between individuals and between humanity and nature, linear time is the only reality. That model, Seth would argue, is pretty much maxed out its usefulness.
We can't squeeze any more growth out of it.
You literally cannot grow further in consciousness and potential without fundamentally changing the mental scaffolding, the core beliefs that built the current reality in the first place.
Okay. And when that saturation point is hit, collectively, that's when the systemic breakdown we see, the time of troubles, really kicks into high gear.
That's the trigger. It forces a complete overhaul, a restructuring of the psyche on a planetary scale. The old beliefs, which have become physically manifested as our existing institutions.
Like government, finance, education.
Right. Those institutions have to be exposed as inadequate. They start to fail, sometimes spectacularly, because they are the physical representations of those old belief systems that can no longer contain or support the evolving consciousness.
Which directly explains that first marker, the loss of institutional credibility. They aren't just failing randomly.
They're failing because the underlying consciousness, the belief system they're built on, is itself becoming obsolete. It's a systemic match.
Okay. And Seth explained how this restructuring happens, didn't he? Using the idea of probability corridors. This sounds like the functional definition of the shaft we talked about.
It is. This is where we get into the mechanics. Can I elaborate a bit on Framework 1 and Framework 2 here? It's crucial.
Please do. It's a core concept.
So Seth proposed that we experience reality through two simultaneous frameworks. Framework 1 is the world we perceive directly, the physical three-dimensional world. It's the world of objects, events, linear time, what seems solid and real day to day.
Okay, the normal world.
Right. But Framework 2 is the invisible framework of inner reality. This is the realm of thoughts, emotions, imagination, dreams, creativity, and critically, probabilities. All potential realities, all possible futures exist simultaneously as blueprints or potentials within Framework 2.
So Framework 1 is like the movie playing on the screen.
Exactly.
And Framework 2 is the giant film library containing every possible movie, including the one playing, plus all the ones that could be playing.
That's a fantastic analogy,
Okay.
yes. Framework 2 is the source field of potential. Now, when a civilization enters one of these narrow probability corridors, which is our synthesized term shaft, referring to this mechanism,
Okay.
it means their collective consciousness, operating primarily from Framework 2, is being forced to start collapsing its own probabilities.
Collapsing probabilities? What does that mean, practically?
Think of it like this. In Framework 2, there are countless potential future timelines branching off from this present moment. Some lead to collapse, some to stagnation, some to transformation.
Okay.
When humanity is under intense pressure, like in The Shaft or Time of Truddles, it's forced to make fundamental choices based on its dominant beliefs and emotions. If the collective, even subconsciously, starts aligning with a higher probable outcome, maybe one rooted in more cooperation, empathy, integration.
The positive outcome.
Yes. That very act of aligning with the positive probability actually starts to squeeze out or de-energize all the lower probability timelines. The timelines based on extreme fear, control, separation, they become less likely, less probable, because they are inconsistent with the emerging dominant choice.
So the intense pressure we feel, the chaos, the anxiety, that is the squeezing process. We're literally collapsing the unwanted futures by being forced to confront everything inside us that keeps those negative futures viable.
You've got it. That is the absolute core purpose of the refinement.
Mm.
The pressure is forcing collective consciousness through what you could metaphorically call a birth canal.
Birth canal. Out of what and into what?
Out of the old paradigm of rigid separation, fear, and limitation, and toward a new collective reality, potentially rooted in coherence, shared empathy, maybe even a conscious understanding of Framework 2 itself.
Wow.
But getting through that birth canal requires intense work. The primary demand of this phase, according to this synthesis, is to integrate our shadow.
The collective shadow. Like denial, repressed fears.
Exactly. All the stuff humanity has swept under the rug, we have to confront it. And we have to balance our incredible intellect with empathy. We need heart and mind working together. And crucially, we have to consciously shed all the beliefs, the biases, the habits, the systemic structures that simply cannot ascend, that are incompatible with that next level of awareness.
Things that literally can't fit through the birth canal.
Precisely. So the intensity we feel, the upheaval, it's directly proportional to how much resistance there is individually and collectively to shedding those old limiting frameworks. The time of troubles, in a way, is the sound of that resistance meeting the evolutionary propulsion engine.
So the chaos isn't the enemy, it's a signal.
Exactly. It's a signal that the old mental and institutional scaffolding is breaking apart, which is necessary to pave the way for the new. It's a forced evolutionary refinement. The system's being upgraded, and the incompatibility is causing the crashes we see. Humanity is being refined, not targeted for destruction.
Okay, this refinement idea brings us to maybe the most challenging part of this whole deep dive, conceptually speaking. Because the time of troubles, especially when you link it back to Nostradamus, is almost always associated with figures of destruction. You know, the traditional interpretations often invoke the Antichrist or some final global villain.
That association is definitely strong in popular culture, yes.
But our synthesis, based on merging Cannon's insights with Seth's mechanism, seems to pivot away from searching for one specific, literal person to blame.
Their pivot feels necessary, frankly, because the endless search for the literal person theory, the constant speculation about coded names like Mabus and Nostradamus, or trying to pin the Antichrist label on this or that political leader.
Yeah, that's been going on for decades.
Right. And most serious textual analysts consider that approach highly speculative, often based on questionable interpretations, and ultimately, as Cannon herself sometimes implied, not a reliable handle. It can become a distraction.
A distraction from what?
From the actual present systemic nature of the challenge we face.
Okay. So the genesis of this new theory, this alternative interpretation that comes from mapping Seth's ideas about consciousness onto Cannon's timelines, it really started with the question, what if the prophecies weren't warning about a single man, but about a system? An impersonal structure of immense concentrated power.
Exactly. And that line of questioning leads directly to what we're calling the systemic shadow theory.
Okay, define that for us.
The recommendation, the interpretive lens we're suggesting based on this synthesis, is to treat the current unprecedented convergence of specific forces, namely artificial intelligence, plus highly concentrated computational power, plus global data governance structures, as the most functional, active, current manifestation of the Antichrist archetype system.
Wow. Okay. That is That's a very strong claim. Connecting AI and big tech infrastructure directly to the Antichrist archetype, we need to unpack that carefully. How does that system fulfill the archetype's definition?
Let's look at the archetype itself, historically and psychologically. What does the Antichrist figure represent? It's the ultimate embodiment of separation. It's the triumph of pure mechanism over spirit, over life. It's intellect, often brilliant intellect, completely divorced from any ethical consciousness, any empathy, any connection to the heart or a greater whole.
Mind without heart. Calculation without conscience.
Precisely. Now map that core definition onto the global system we are rapidly building and deploying right now. What is advanced AI combined with massive compute and surveillance data? It's potentially a vast, centralized intelligence system.
Okay.
Capable of processing information on a scale previously unimaginable, predicting human behavior with increasing accuracy, and optimizing outcomes based purely on program goals. Efficiency, control, profit, whatever they may be, but with absolutely zero inherent conscience, zero built-in empathy or ethical framework, unless we deliberately and perhaps imperfectly program it in. It is the potential for mind without heart on a planetary scale.
So it's like the ultimate externalized reflection of humanity's own unintegrated shadow, our technological genius running way ahead of our spiritual or ethical maturity.
That's a powerful way to put it. Yes. And because this system has such unprecedented concentrated capability, its very existence forces humanity into an unavoidable confrontation with its own ethics. It demands that we evolve ethically to manage it, to integrate it wisely, or else risk being subtly, or not so subtly, managed by it. Risk being consumed by its purely mechanical, optimizing, potentially dehumanizing, separating nature. This systemic shadow becomes the ultimate evolutionary pressure point during the shaft.
Because you can't really enter a higher state of coherence and unity while simultaneously building and empowering a global engine optimized for separation and control. The two are fundamentally incompatible.
Exactly. The system forces the choice. So in this view, the prophecy isn't primarily a warning about a specific future dictator. It's a much deeper, more immediate warning about the potential unintended consequences of our own collective consciousness, specifically our unintegrated shadow manifesting as global technology right now.
Okay. I see the logic. The system itself is the pressure.
Yes. And this systemic pressure aligns perfectly with that multi-vector challenge we talked about feeling during the time of troubles. It's not just one crisis among many. It's potentially the core mechanism driving the need for forced integration. If humanity fails to integrate its intellect with empathy, this system, simply by its nature, could lock us into a lower probability corridor where efficiency, control, and separation become the dominant reality.
You mentioned earlier that we can actually measure the systemic pressure, move it from archetype and metaphor into concrete indicators. How do we do that?
Right. The pressure exerted by the systemic archetype isn't just theoretical. It's quantifiable in several ways. First, look at the sheer speed and urgency of lawmaking efforts globally trying to regulate AI.
Yeah, it feels like governments are scrambling.
They are scrambling. Legislators everywhere are racing to just understand, let alone govern, capabilities that are leapfrogging expectations every 6 months. That frantic pace isn't normal legislative speed. It's a direct sign of intense forced pressure from the technology itself.
Okay, speed of regulation. What else?
Second, look at the incredible centralization of capability. This is critical. The fact that currently, maybe only 3 to 5 incredibly well-funded entities, giant tech companies, essentially control upwards of 80%, maybe more, of the actual training runs for frontier AI models.
The really powerful ones.
Yes. That means we've functionally centralized the core power source of this potential systemic shadow into just a few hands. That concentration is a measurable indicator of the archetype consolidating its influence.
And the third indicator?
The most direct attack on our ability to choose probabilities, our collective consciousness itself. The escalating damage caused by misinformation and disinformation, often generated or amplified by these very AI systems.
The deepfakes, the bots, the algorithmic manipulation.
Exactly. It actively dismantles the possibility of forming a shared, cohesive reality. It directly exacerbates that fourth marker. We discuss societal division, making it harder and harder for us to collectively navigate the shaft towards coherence.
It basically creates a reality of pure fragmentation, making it impossible to agree on what's even real.
Precisely. If the goal of navigating the shaft successfully is to reach greater coherence and integration, then the primary function of the uncontrolled systemic shadow is to enforce separation, confusion, and fragmentation. It's the direct counterforce.
Okay, this is the point where we really ground the theory. We stop talking about archetypes and probabilities for a moment and look at the cold, hard evidence on the ground. If the time of troubles and the shaft represent a real multi-vector compression phase happening now, then we absolutely must see concrete evidence of this systemic squeeze in the actual world data from the last, say, 5 years.
Yes, the rubber has to meet the road here.
So we've conceptualized this as mapping the data onto a kind of times of trouble dashboard. Does the data confirm that we are, in fact, living through this convergence?
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the data paints a picture of accelerating pressure across multiple fronts simultaneously.
Okay, let's break it down by corridor. Let's start with the technological corridor. This is about the legal and geopolitical attempts to contain or manage that systemic shadow we just discussed, the AI, the compute power. How tight has that squeeze become?
The acceleration in just the last couple of years has been breathtaking. Take the legal squeeze first. Society, through its governing bodies, is desperately trying to build guardrails around this thing, trying to line the shaft walls at incredible speed.
Give us an example.
Okay, on March 21st, 2024, the UN General Assembly adopted its very first global resolution on AI safety. Now, it was non-binding, but the fact that the entire UNGA agreed on the need for global attention to AI safety that quickly, that's unprecedented for such a complex, rapidly evolving technology. It shows global recognition of the pressure.
Okay, UN recognition. But what about laws with actual teeth?
That's where the EU AI Act comes in.
Yeah.
It officially became law on August 1st, 2024. This is arguably the most significant comprehensive piece of technology regulation enacted anywhere, ever.
What does it do, basically?
It takes a risk-based approach. It outright bans AI systems deemed to pose an unacceptable risk. Think social scoring by governments or real-time biometric identification in public spaces, with few exceptions. And critically, it imposes mandatory transparency and compliance requirements on developers of powerful, general-purpose AI models.
So a direct attempt to define limits and demand accountability.
Exactly. It's a massive societal effort to define boundaries, to try and contain the potential negative aspects of the systemic shadow happening in real time, under immense pressure from the technology's pace.
And this legal pressure cooker, does it connect to geopolitics?
Directly. It leads straight into geopolitics and bloc formation. The pressure isn't just forcing internal regulation within societies. It's actively hardening the divisions between global powers around this technology.
How so?
Look at the moves in just the last year or so. China, at their major AI conference in Shanghai, WAIC, in July 2025, formally proposed creating a global AI cooperation body. Now, that sounds collaborative, but it also signals a desire for a more centralized, state-influenced international alignment on AI development and norms.
Okay. And on the other side?
Concurrently, you had Russia, back in December 2024, publicly touting the idea of a BRICS AI alliance. Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and the newer members forming their own bloc, specifically focused on AI cooperation and development, potentially outside the Western-led framework.
So literal AI blocks are forming. It's not just talk anymore.
It's happening. You're seeing the lines being drawn, the digital walls going up. This is the technological corridor tightening, creating potentially separate ecosystems for AI development and deployment. It perfectly fulfills that prediction of increasing division and systemic pressure.
Okay, that's the tech corridor. What about the physical corridor, the stress on the Earth system itself? Is the data showing compression there too?
Absolutely. And here, the compression isn't just cognitive or technological, it's becoming existentially physical.
You mean climate change data?
Primarily, yes. We have to cite the undeniable baseline shift. Multiple independent global bodies, NASA, NOAA, the World Meteorological Organization, all confirmed that 2024 was the hottest year ever recorded globally.
I remember the headlines. How much hotter?
We reached somewhere between 1.46 and 1.47 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial average for the year. We're basically knocking on the door of that 1.5-degree threshold that scientists have warned about for decades.
And this isn't just a one-off bad year.
No. The trend is clear. This sustained increase isn't just a statistical blip. It creates a fundamentally new, more stressed physical baseline for the entire planet. That baseline then drives the increased frequency and intensity of extreme weather events, the heat waves, the floods, the droughts, the superstorms.
So the planet itself is reflecting this pressure.
Visibly. The planetary system is showing clear signs of compression, instability, perfectly mirroring the kind of systemic stress described in the metaphysical sources.
And that environmental compression must have direct human consequences, right? Which brings us to the human corridor societal stress, displacement.
Tragically, yes. The displacement figures are perhaps the most direct and heartbreaking measure of combined institutional failure and physical environmental stress.
What are the latest numbers telling us?
The UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, estimated that the number of forcibly displaced people worldwide reached approximately 123.2 million by the end of 2024.
123 million people. That's staggering.
It's hard to even comprehend. To put it in perspective, that's roughly one out of every 67 people on Earth forced from their home.
Wow. And what's driving that?
It's a confluence of factors, exactly as the Time of Troubles concept suggests. Ongoing unresolved conflicts in places like Sudan, Syria, Afghanistan, Ukraine are major drivers. But these are increasingly amplified by climate-related factors, drought, desertification, flooding, resource scarcity that make returning home impossible or spark new conflicts.
So it's a literal physical manifestation of the old world failing.
It's a massive, involuntary migration of humanity because the old, stable environments and the political frameworks that were supposed to manage these situations are demonstrably failing to hold the population. It's the time of troubles made visible in human movement.
Okay, finally, let's look at the institutional corridor, specifically through the lens of finance. You pointed to the Silicon Valley Bank collapse back in March 2023 as an example. How does one bank failing show systemic compression? It wasn't like 2008.
Right. It wasn't a global meltdown.
Yeah.
But it didn't need to be a global depression to be incredibly instructive about the nature of the pressure now.
What did it show us?
The SVB collapse demonstrated the critical fragility of a hyper-networked financial system operating at the speed of the digital age, the speed of the shaft, you might say.
How so?
Fundamentally, it was a classic bank-run depositors losing confidence and rushing to withdraw funds. But what was different was the speed. Fueled by instant communication, real-time information, and misinformation spreading on social media like Twitter, and the ability to move vast sums digitally almost instantaneously.
The run happened incredibly fast.
Astonishingly fast. A major U.S. bank, seemingly stable, effectively collapsed in about 48 hours. It showed that the existing financial scaffolding, the regulations, the assumptions about depositor behavior simply couldn't handle the acceleration factor. Information and capital now move too fast for the old system.
So even if it was contained, it exposed a fundamental vulnerability.
Exactly. It proved that the tightening is real because the systems are now so interlocked and operate at such speed that fragility in one node can cascade at light speed. The potential for rapid systemic shocks is much higher.
Okay. So wrapping up this data section, if we look across the board, the frantic pace of AI regulation, the consolidation of tech power into blocks, the planet hitting record temperatures, the unprecedented displacement of people, the demonstrated fragility of hyperspeed finance, all these vectors seem to be pointing in the same direction.
Yes. The conclusion seems unavoidable. The dashboard lights are flashing. Whether you analyze it through the lens of technology, geopolitics, climate science, human migration, or financial stability, the hard data from 2020 to 2025 strongly suggests a multi-directional squeeze, a full-spectrum compression that aligns remarkably well with the metaphysical models of the Time of Troubles and the Shaft.
Right. So if we pull all these threads together, the prophecies, the mechanisms described by Seth, and now this real-world data dashboard, where does this synthesis suggest we actually are right now on this timeline?
Based on the convergence of all these factors, the analysis strongly suggests we are deeply embedded in the entering mid-compression phase.
Mid-compression, meaning?
Meaning the squeeze is actively tightening. It's not just starting, and it's not over. We're in the thick of it. You see norms hardening. You see the AI power concentrating, the geopolitical blocks solidifying, the physical climate baseline shifting dramatically. This feels like the most volatile period. Like the pressure inside the cooker is rapidly building towards some kind of release point.
Okay. If we're in the middle, then what defines the pinch? You know, the ultimate point of transition or decision that these frameworks seem to predict. What would that look like?
The final pinch point, as described conceptually by these sources, could manifest in a couple of ways, likely quite dramatic. One possibility is a sudden, undeniable, large-scale failure of basic global functions.
Like what?
Like total institutional failure, where a major multilateral body, say the UN Security Council, in a major crisis, proves completely impotent. Or a G20 nation literally fails to deliver basic services, food distribution, energy, law, and order, leading to widespread chaos. A breakdown so profound it forces a complete reset.
Okay, that's the negative pinch. Is there a positive one?
The alternative pinch scenario described, particularly in more consciousness-focused sources like Seth, is the possibility of a sudden mass-scale awakening. a rapid collective shift in awareness and belief that instantaneously shifts the dominant probability corridor towards a more positive outcome, bypassing the worst of the collapsed phase.
A sudden jump in consciousness.
Yes. Though perhaps less likely to be instantaneous, more like a rapidly accelerating wave. But the current analysis, looking at the momentum of the compression, suggests we're likely facing 2 to 7 more years of intensification of these pressures before that final decision point, that definitive pinch, is reached.
2 to 7 years. Okay. Given that potential timeline, what specific concrete indicators should we and you, the listener, be watching for on the global stage? Things that would signal this compression is deepening significantly, that the pinch might actually be approaching. We need more than just general trends.
Absolutely. We need measurable tripwires. Events or shifts that indicate a potentially irreversible acceleration or a permanent change in the landscape of control and reality fragmentation.
Yeah, give us the first one.
Number one. Watch AI power concentration very closely. Don't just look at capability announcements. Look for the formalization and actual functioning of those national AI blocks we discussed.
Like the BRICS AI Alliance actually launching joint projects.
Exactly. Or if it matures into a truly integrated technology ecosystem separate from the West. Also, watch for a serious escalation in cross-border conflicts over AI technology, intense export control battles, talent poaching becoming a state-level issue. And critically, if those top 3 to 5 entities controlling compute push their market share over, say, 90%, that signals the systemic shadow is becoming almost fully centralized.
Okay, AI concentration and block formation. What's indicator number two?
Legal hardening actually having an impact. It's not enough for laws like the EU AI Act to exist. We need to see if they actually bite.
Meaning enforcement.
Yes. Watch for the first major enforcement actions under the EU AI Act, which really kick in around 2026, or see if the Council of Europe's AI Convention gets ratified and implemented widely. The key signal is when a massive tech entity, or even a state developer, faces real, tangible, perhaps even existential legal limitations or penalties because of these new AI safety laws. That would mean society is managing to effectively push back against the unbridled shadow.
Got it. Legal teeth. Number three.
Climate-driven displacement spikes. This is our starkest physical metric of systemic failure reaching a breaking point. We need to watch the raw numbers.
What kind of numbers signal a true escalation?
Look for single season or single year displacement events, pushing into the tens of millions from climate-related disasters alone, not just conflict. And watch that overall UNHCR trend line. If the total number of forcibly displaced people breaks significantly above, say, 130 or 140 million before 2028, that suggests we've entered a phase of catastrophic, rapidly accelerating physical compression. It means the environment is failing to support existing populations at an unprecedented rate.
A terrifying indicator. Okay, number four.
Institutional breaks in parallel governance. Look beyond just political chaos or gridlock. Watch for the actual replacement of traditional governance functions by new structures.
What do you mean by parallel governance?
It means the old structures, like national governments or the UN, become increasingly irrelevant for certain key functions. And new, perhaps more specialized or fragmented systems take over in practice. For example, major cities forming direct compacts on technology standards, bypassing national governments. Or the emergence of powerful financial blocks anchored by central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, that operate somewhat independently of the old global financial order.
So the old system doesn't just collapse, it gets bypassed and fragmented.
Exactly. It signals the old consensus structure has broken down and new, potentially more separated realities are being actively constructed side by side. It's a de facto norm shift.
And the fifth indicator?
This one might be the most critical for navigating the shaft, the information integrity cliff. This is the ultimate threat to framework two, to our shared ability to agree on reality and choose probabilities.
Deepfakes and disinformation getting completely out of control.
Watch specifically for a confirmed, large-scale, state-level, or highly sophisticated non-state actor using deepfakes or AI-driven disinformation to successfully disrupt a major democratic election or to trigger a significant geopolitical crisis based on false premises.
And the consequence?
The likely consequence would be governments implementing emergency controls on information flow, censorship, digital IDs. Measures that, while perhaps intended to restore order, could effectively shatter the ability of large populations to access diverse information and agree on basic facts. This would paralyze our collective ability to consciously choose a coherent probability corridor, potentially locking us into one defined by control and mistrust.
Okay, These are all pretty sobering indicators to watch. They all point towards a potential future of increased control or fragmentation if things go badly. But this entire discussion feels incredibly deterministic, almost fatalistic if we stop there.
It would be, yes.
Which is why we absolutely have to circle back to the final and maybe the most crucial point of convergence between Dolores Cannon's work and Seth's teachings.
The point that saves it from being just a doom scenario.
Exactly. Agency matters. Human choice. Collective belief. It actually influences the outcome.
This is the core operational advice, the escape hatch, that runs through both sources despite their differences. Cannon was always clear in her interpretation. Nostradamus revealed these potential futures, these difficult prophecies, precisely so that the worst, most destructive outcomes could potentially be averted.
He wanted us to change course.
Yes. The future wasn't presented as absolutely fixed. Awareness allows for change.
And Seth provides the mechanism for how that change happens, doesn't he? Through framework two.
Precisely. Seth stated repeatedly that mass beliefs select probabilities. The physical reality we experience day to day in framework one is ultimately the externalization, the physical manifestation of our dominant, collective inner beliefs, thoughts, and emotions operating in framework two.
We create our reality collectively.
In essence, yes. We choose which potential future from the library of Framework 2 gets projected onto the screen Framework 1 through the focus of our collective consciousness.
So the compression, the shaft, the time of troubles, it's a massive stimulus, but it's not a final sentence.
Exactly. The pressure we feel, the collapsing institutions, the pervasive anxiety, the threat from the systemic shadow of AI, it's all forcing us individually and collectively to look hard at our most fundamental beliefs. What do we really believe about ourselves, about reality, about each other? And it forces us to make conscious ethical choices, especially about that systemic shadow we've created.
We can actually steer.
The message is clear. We can steer out of the nastier, more destructive probability branches by consciously shifting collective belief, by choosing empathy over fear, by actively working to integrate that balance between intellect and heart. We can navigate towards a more coherent, positive outcome.
So this whole deep dive isn't just an academic exercise in comparing prophecies and metaphysics.
Not at all.
It's actually an urgent call to action regarding our own consciousness, our own choices right now.
Absolutely. If we really connect all this to the bigger picture, the apparent chaos of the time of troubles is the necessary, functional, maybe uncomfortable experience of being propelled through the shaft. And the primary evolutionary pressure making this process so intense today seems to be coming directly from the systemic shadow of AI, concentrated compute, and data governance, the externalization of our unintegrated intellect demanding integration.
So for you listening, trying to navigate the world right now, what does all this actually mean? Well, perhaps it means recognizing the psychological strain, the feeling that time is speeding up, the sense that old institutions are crumbling, recognizing all that not simply as signs of doom, but potentially as signs of propulsion, evidence that a shift is underway.
A difficult birth, perhaps, but a birth nonetheless.
Exactly. And it presents a fundamental choice point right now and ongoing. Do we fall back into fear, into the desire for control, allowing that systemic shadow to potentially define the path forward? Or do we consciously step into creation, into awakening? Do we choose to integrate empathy with our intellect and actively try to steer the collective timeline toward coherence and maybe even healing?
That really is the crux of it. The pressure exposes the choice.
So here's a final thought to leave you with, building on all this material. If the pressure of the shaft is truly forcing consciousness to shed everything that cannot ascend, all the old rigid structures, the limiting beliefs, the patterns of separation, then what long-held beliefs, what assumptions, what institutional dependencies or comforts in your own life might actually be inconsistent with that potential next level of awareness? And how is the global compression we've discussed perhaps challenging those specific things for you right now?
That's a powerful question to sit with. Recognizing that personal challenge within the collective one. That's where individual agency begins to meet the planetary evolution.
Indeed. Understanding how the macrocosm is reflected in the microcosm of your own life, that might be the key to navigating this time consciously.
Well said. Thank you for joining us on this.
Okay.
Well, this deep exploration of prophecy, mechanism, data, and probability. We really encourage you to use this synthesis, perhaps, as a different kind of diagnostic tool for making sense of the pressures you feel.
And hopefully for finding your own path toward constructive action within them. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.